We can't seem to get through discussion of archaeology on the exchange without mentioning Indiana Jones. Even the archaeologists do it. So let's get it over with. Real archaeology is not like the Indiana Jones movies. Not only is it unlikely to find some priceless artifact on a booby-trapped pedestal, but would any self-respecting archaeologist in today's world try to make off with such an artifact? Probably not. But today's guest can tell us about a real dig in southern Oregon, south central Oregon, in the Fremont-Wyneema National Forest in Lake County. The dig took place at the site of the Crooked Creek Mill Camp, a major logging and milling operation gone since the 1930s. John Kaiser is the guest. He's the archaeologist and archaeologist with the Fremont-Wyneema National Forest. John, thanks for joining us on the exchange today.
Glad to be here, Jeffrey.
So tell us about the usual run of your job and what a forest archaeologist does day in, day out.
Well, you said it. It's not Indiana Jones. Maybe briefly, there might be one moment in your career which is a little Indiana Jones-like. But mostly it's day-to-day archaeology work. It's probably more in line with what we call cultural resource management. We have a lot of sites that we have found on the forest, the Fremont and the Wyneema. We have over 9,000 recorded sites, and these are a mix of prehistoric sites, small kind of encampments where the native people would have made tools, sharpened tools, manufactured other kinds of tools, processed their food, and left the ubiquitous obsidian chips and chunks behind, and that's what we find.
At 9,000, is the Fremont Wyneema about average for a national forest, or is that a larger than average number, or lower?
Large maybe? Number. Yeah. That's a large number, but forests like the Willow Whitman, the Deschutes, any of these east side forests have close to that number of sites, probably because we can find them. When you're on the west side of Oregon, you have a lot of vegetation and ground cover, and it's hard to find things over there. But I'm sure that in the past there was same amount of Indians living all over, and there probably are a lot of sites in western Oregon. You have a lot of sites around your area. There are Ashland and Metro area in the woods.
And this is fairly standard work for an archaeologist like yourself is to go explore these sites to make sure, for example, when things are going on, they're not disturbing native areas.
That's what we work under. We work under a couple laws, National Historic Preservation Act of 1966 and the Executive Order 11593 in 1972. And those are laws that were passed by Congress telling the Forest Service to get out there and look, do surveys on projects prior to logging or road building or fence building or any kind of construction ground disturbing project. So we go out before that happens and we try to find things, and we're pretty good at it. We've been doing this for a while, and then when we find it, we determine if it's significant or not. We're not going to protect just one piece of obsidian or even two or three pieces of obsidian. There has to be some numbers there and some reason to protect it. So we record that, we flag it, and then we work with the timber folks or who's ever in charge of the project to avoid that. Sometimes it can't be avoided. So then we do our archaeological evaluation on that to mitigate the expected damage that is coming up.
Given the downward trend in timber sales in the last 2.5 decades, has there been a drop-off in activity for archaeologists as well? I mean, are you getting called upon to do less of this site investigation?
Well, no. There actually is. We're kind of going to see an upswing in timber production here on the Fremont Wyneema. We've been handed a kind of a mandate from Congress to do some large landscape restoration projects, which involve logging, but they also involves vegetation management for improvement for wildlife habitat, water quality, you know, fish habitat. So we're looking at some big areas now, and so then we have to go out and do our survey work. A lot of these areas we've already looked at. You know, we've gone over some areas a couple times. So we just go back and freshen our flagging, maybe re-record the site, and maybe the site is maybe more has appeared on the ground because of conditions, some erosion, or sometimes these artifacts, they just kind of pop out of the ground because of we call it bioturbation. It's the soil moving the artifact. And in our pumice zones, which is up around near Crater Lake, we have sites that disappear completely into the pumice, and then they come back, you know, a few years later.
Oh, so they sink and they surface? They sink and they surface in cycles like that?
Yes, it's interesting. You know, the freeze-thaw cycle. So we have recorded a site, let's say, 10 years ago, and we go try to find it again, and we can't find it. So it's an interesting the movement of materials out there.
It really is. So let's talk about the Crooked Creek Mill Camp site. I understand this is not just any logging site in the forest.
No. This was one of our first large timber sales, 1926 through the early 30s. They set up most of the logging prior to this camp, this mill, this period was small outfits at the mouth of a lot of different canyons, and they were just getting timber for local construction. And some of it did leave the area. A lot of our timber went south to the San Francisco Bay Area because we had railroad connections that way at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this mill site, Crooked Creek Mill Site, was our first large timber sale. People don't maybe understand board feet, but it was 36 million board feet over a period of about 5 or 6 years.
Which is, it would be a very good sized timber sale in today's world,
yes,
too, for sure.
Yes, yeah, it's large. And so,
Yeah, well, let's pick it up on the other side of a break. You heard the music. Thanks for that.
Okay,
John Kaiser's
okay.
Our guest. He's an archaeologist at the Fremont Wainema National Forest. We'll take a short break and come back and talk more with him about this fascinating dig at the Crooked Creek Mill Camp in Lake County. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with John Kaiser and your phone calls and emails in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking today about archaeology and a specific archaeological dig going on in our region in south central Oregon in Lake County in the Fremont Wainema National Forest. The Crooked Creek Mill Camp site was explored during the course of this past year by John Kaiser, the archaeologist for the Fremont Wainema National Forest, and some volunteers as well. We'll talk about the Passport in Time program that brought people out there and what they found and what they were looking for in the first place. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions and comments, 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So a good amount of timber coming out of one of the major sales coming out of what was the, was it the Fremont National Forest by that point yet?
Yes, the Fremont.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Fremont National Forest and the first really large timber sale. Our railroad was completed here in 1913. So we had a railroad connection to the south. So there was a market growing. This was a large timber sale, and it was just north of Lakeview here in Crooked Creek Canyon, an area which we call the Cove. And there was a camp associated with this mill. It was men, women, children, a few hundred people living in the woods. And there's remains of that camp still there. And then the mill site itself was a lot closer to Highway 395. In fact, 395 existed at the time. They used that as a transportation route. But so you had this mill site, which was near Crooked Creek. They needed the water to run their steam turbines. That's how they generated their power. Steam-driven saws. And I picked it because I'm very interested in, probably more interested in history than the prehistory. and a lot of people are too. So these are can be very popular kinds of excavations.
And how much did you know going in, John, about the site? I mean, how much is recorded in pictures, in words, in any other form?
There really, Jeffrey, is not a lot of information about this site. We have, at that time, you had to incorporate with the state of Oregon if you were a corporation. So we have that information from the files, the state corporation files of that time. So we know I just don't have information in front of me right now, but we know the people that were doing it, and we know when they did it, and how long it lasts, and some of the volume that they took out in timber. But my interest was in the mill site itself, because at the site there's remains of large cement foundations that supported the saws. They're still there. There's still some other features. There's a pond where the water was. There's a pile of fire brick where they had the stove to heat the water to make the steam to drive the saws. And then there's scattered around, there's different piles of metal and glass and nails and those kinds of things. And, you know, nothing really stands out. So that's why we decided we should do a little excavation on the site. And that's what we did last summer with our Passport and Time volunteers.
How unique, if at all? I mean, was it fairly regular to have an operation like this in the late 20s, mid to late 20s, where you get the milling operation close to the actual raw logs?
No, I mean, this was common all over the West, you know, logging camps and mill sites, and this kind of a cultural phenomena was going on, you know, mostly up until World War II. And we have other logging camps on the forest too. We have the Iwana Camp, the Pelican Camp, the Crater Lake Camp. So it was fairly common, and sometimes these logs fed into Klamath Falls, and then the timber would go there to Iwana Mill, where they would make. It's interesting. Most of this timber, and people maybe don't understand this, but like today, most of our boxes are made out of cardboard. At that time, a lot of the boxes were made out of wood. So this timber would go to different mills to be made into boxes, wooden fruit boxes. You see them sometimes occasionally now, too.
Right. There was a major box company in Hilt, California, just over the state line.
So that was the need for timber to make boxes. You know, I mean, today we just see 2x4s and whatever, but so it's a different kind of industry at that time. And so it wasn't uncommon, but it was our first big timber sale and our first camp and our first mill, and it was very involved. They had an interesting road. It's called a corduroy road, which is made up of logs laid next to each other.
That sounds like a bumpy ride.
Yeah, it would be kind of bumpy, but that was because, you know, I don't know if they even thought about putting rock down, but there was a lot of wood, a lot of trees, so you could make a road like that. So we had a corduroy road, went from the mill to Highway 395, and then they had a spot there where they were stacking the lumber, and then we'd get hauled off for sale. At the mill site, let me get back to that, there were certain areas where there was, like I said, glass, nails, pieces of metal, and that's where we put our test pits. And these are 1 meter by 2 meter holes that are constructed. You know, they're not sloppy. We're very careful. We have straight lines and straight walls, and we slowly dug through the dirt there and sifted it with our screens. And the volunteers got to do all that. They got to participate in be archaeologists, and that's part of the fun of Passport and Time, is you can go be an archaeologist for a week and have that experience. We didn't find a lot, and I didn't know what to expect there. I thought there might be more than what we found. We did find some unique items, and one of the items we found was a chain with two links, and these mill sites, they had their own blacksmith shop. So a lot of stuff was made right there on site.
So they manufacture their own parts, really?
Yes. Not necessarily engine parts, but anything, straps and, you know, wire bundles and any kind of levers or plates, just all kinds of metal stuff. But this chain is very interesting. It's constructed in such a way that you can take it apart and put it back together, each link. And I wish I could show it to you, you know. Radio is kind of tough, I guess, to see things.
For this, yeah.
Yeah, but it's very unique.
And the purpose of it was just to hold something down or hold machinery in place or something?
It's just a chain. Like we go to the hardware store and buy a chain link, you know. And they're rounded, and they have a little bit of a gap in them, cut at right angles, and so you can put a link together, two links together, or you can take them apart. So you can make the chain as long as you want, as short as you want, and it still has the same strength.
It sounds almost like those puzzles where you're trying to put parts together, but you have to get them a certain way. So that was the way the links.
Yeah, it's kind of like those magic rings or whatever you might buy at a magician shop. go ahead.
John Kaiser's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an archaeologist at the Fremont-Wyneema National Forest. We're talking about the fun he and his volunteers had this summer digging at the Crooked Creek Mill Camp in Lake County, not very far from Lakeview. And about the Passport in Time program that allowed this all to happen. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You might have questions or comments about the process of this particular site or about archaeology on forest sites more generally. Join us at 800-838-3760. That number works anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we have mentioned that the Passport in Time program peripherally so far. Let's talk a little more specifically about how that works.
Okay, Passport in Time is a volunteer program to do archaeology and historic preservation on U.S. Forest Service lands. Volunteers work with professional archaeologists, historians on forests throughout the United States. We have 155 national forests in this nation, and just about every one of them offers a Passport in Time experience. You can do archaeological survey, you can do excavation, rock art restoration. I'm trying to think what else you could be doing. Rock art restoration.
Yeah, rock art restoration. That in itself sounds interesting. So you're actually restoring some prehistoric art?
Yes. You do. I mean, you have to be very careful about that. But it's but mostly it's removing present day graffiti or any kind of damage that's been done to the rock art without damaging the rock art itself. You can do archival research. A big thing that I've done in the past, and a lot of forests do, is the restoration of historic structures, especially CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps structures. You can do oral history gathering. You can get involved in analysis and curation of artifacts. And so when you come to the forest, your host is the forest archaeologist or a historian, and they'll guide you and work with you on these projects.
And so it sounds like much more than a 9-to-5 job. I mean, particularly with the long summer days, and I'm assuming this happened in the warm season. So did you spend?
Yeah, we did our excavation in July, which is a nice time to be out there doing things. But no, we don't work long days. Like my volunteers, I had four volunteers for this project, and two of them are in their mid 80s. But they're very active people, very strong, active people, but you just can't overwork them. You know, you have to be careful there. A lot of people show up and they just have never done anything like dig or shake a screen or something. So it's a little different for them. And sometimes they're not outside people either. So they're out there in the elements with mosquitoes and flies and bees. And it's just all, you have all that experience too. But
Let's talk about the people in their 80s, because this is really interesting. This is the Durhams, right? The married couple?
The Durhams. You know the Durhams.
Well, I know from having read your accounts of what happened out there.
Oh, yeah. They're just great people. They live there from Los Gatos, California. I've had them a couple years. They've come back to a couple of projects for me. And they do numerous Passport in Time. They're just all over the place. But they have a piece of land in Doris, California, which is near here, as you know. So they come up and check their land, and they come over and work with me for a week. Just very interesting people, alert, and you know, very helpful. And I hope I can be as energetic at 85 as they are. And then I had a lady from Coos Bay a retired nurse, and it was all new to her. She'd never been on a passport in time, and I think she really enjoyed it. It just kind of opened up her world, and she moved to Deming, New Mexico, and she writes me she's enjoying all the things down in New Mexico, all the pueblos and all the Indian artifacts down there. And then I had a local archaeology student here in Lakeview as finished off the group. So it's kind of a mixed group, but
so half of them were doing this for the first time, it sounds like, or well, maybe not the archaeology student, but certainly one of them.
Right.
So how do you break them in? I'm just curious to know, when you get volunteers out on a site for the first time, how you get them started. Is there any rookie hazing or something?
No. I'm just trying to give them a background of what we're doing and a little history of the site. And you have to set up your excavation in an archaeological scientific way, where we lay out these test pits, and then we excavate just a layer at a time, which is 10 centimeters. And we sift through that, and whatever we find. And we just found a lot of nails and glass and pieces of metal, but we found these unique chain links. I think we did find some enamelware, plates, pieces of plates and cups and stuff, which indicate that. It's interesting that this stuff, it's not just your common or ordinary. It's like they took it from their house, like they took the best dishes, and they're out there at the mill site with this best plate, and it gets broken, and we find it later. So sometimes you can find it interesting, which is what archaeology is all about. You're reconstructing these people's life ways, their culture, what were they doing. And volunteers, they always seem to have a good time. And for me, John Kaiser is probably the best week of the year. I have the most fun.
The passport in time week is your favorite week of the year?
Oh, yeah, because I can just get away from the computer, get away from the phone, get away from anybody trying to get me to do anything, and I can go out for a week and just do archaeology. It's very pleasant.
That does sound great. John Kaiser, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, archaeologist with the Fremont-Wainema National Forest. We're talking about the Passport in Time program a little more generally, and this year's specific Passport in Time project at the Crooked Creek Mill Camp site in Lake County, north of Lakeview. This particular location, how big did this the Crooked Creek Mill Camp get at its peak? I mean, how many people were there? What kind of square footage?
Well, there were a few hundred people in the camp, and then there was wives and children. We did find some toys, pieces of toys in the camp, so there were little kids there. We found the head of a doll. We found a little horse, a little iron horse. So it was kind of just families, and this is very common. You didn't have to commute too far to go to work. It was just right there. And you're in the woods, and you're doing it right there.
Now, was part of the reason for this process just because the roads were so lousy early in the 20th century that it just made more sense to move the people to the woods than truck it all out?
Yeah, that's been the trend. You know, even the Forest Service, when I came to work for the Forest Service, we had people living out in guard stations in different places, and we just don't have that anymore. Everybody goes home at night, and commutes back in the next day. I think it's just been a kind of a cultural trend in our workforce over time. I do want to tell your listeners about Passport in Time. They can go on the internet, on the computer, and you just go to Google or wherever, and you type in Passport in Time, all one word, .com, and that takes you to the Passport in Time webpage. And it's just full of information. It's full of how to apply. Well, there's nothing on there right now. There are no projects in the world.
I noticed that. Yeah, at this point, there's nothing in the pipeline. But yes, we are linked to that from our own blurb about this particular program segment on our website at jeffexchange.org. But with 155 different national forests, most of them do have a Passport in Time project every year.
Well, most of them do. We are encouraged to do that. It's part of our program. I think we probably have peaked. The program started in 1991 on the Superior National Forest in Minnesota, And so it's been going on, you know, here for 20 years or more. And we did a lot more projects, I'd say, 10 years ago. I mean, we're still doing them, and maybe there's a little bit of an upswing. But we've had some budget problems and personnel. You know, we're reducing our people that are working in the Forest Service. So it's been kind of down lately. But you can go to that webpage and you go to Oregon, if that's what you're interested in, or Northern California. You know, that's our listening area.
Mm-hmm.
And you just click on Oregon or California, and you click on a particular forest, and it will list the projects. And then you apply. Like I had 15 people apply for this project, and I had to choose four, and sometimes it's difficult.
I imagine that could be a tricky proposition. We'll talk about the process of selecting volunteers for Passport in Time projects, and we'll talk more about the Crooked Creek Mill Camp itself with John Kaiser, the archaeologist from the Fremont Wainema National Forest. He's based in the Lakeview area. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange, talk more with John, take some of your phone calls and emails as well if you'd like to join us back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is John Kaiser, the archaeologist with the Fremont Wainema National Forest. He has been supervising a dig, or did over this past summer, at the Crooked Creek Mill Camp north of Lakeview in Lake County, Oregon, a camp that was out in the woods in the 1920s and into the 1930s and pretty much vanished without a lot left behind, as they discovered. But it's one of several projects in the Passport in Time program run by the U.S. Forest Service. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this particular dig, archaeology more generally, or the Passport in Time program. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So we were just talking about having 15 people apply for this particular Passport in Time project, and you had to pick four. So first of all, they are volunteers, right? So they don't get paid for this. Do they get any travel money or any stipend for lodging or anything?
No, this is different. Maybe you've heard of the Rhodes Scholar Program,
mm-hmm.
which used to be the Elder Hostel.
Elder Hostel, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there you pay. You pay to go on those kinds of experiences. But they feed you and they give you a place to sleep, probably. We don't do that.
Uh-huh.
But you don't pay us anything either. You're on your own. Either you're camping or you stay in a motel or you stay in your trailer. We have a lot of places to stay here that are quite reasonable. And you feed yourself. Sometimes if the group gets pretty friendly, I'll take them all out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the week, we might go have that kind of experience. But it's interesting. It's like any group. You meet on the Monday of the week, and by Tuesday afternoon, you're the best of friends. You've known each other forever, you know, it's because you work so closely together. And people are having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're happy and they're friendly. And but to pick to go from 15 or whatever down to four. And I do four because sometimes it's just me supervising and I only have one vehicle and I can't haul everybody. But we're encouraged to bring repeat Passport in Time people, like mm-hmm. the Durhams. We're encouraged to bring on new people, like this lady from Coos Bay. And we're encouraged to bring students into any kind of archaeology students, anthropology students, history students. To give them some experience, too, to see if this is something they want to do for a career. So that's kind of how I pick them.
You got exactly that mix this year, for sure.
I did get that mix this year. And frequently I'll pick couples. You know, if they both will want to volunteer, I usually pick both of them. And I've had... I have a lot of interesting people from all over. this time they were from Oregon, California. I've had people from Montana, people from back east come out here to experience this is Western archaeology.
Let's take a call. We have Greg and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Crooked Creek Mill Camp dig and the Passport and Time program with John Kaiser, archaeologist at the Fremont Wyneema National Forest.
Good morning.
Hi, Greg.
It's interesting listening to Mr. Kaiser describing the steam mill and the box factory and the economic base for making those boxes. I wonder if he's familiar with the Phillips Brothers Mill east of Reading.
Huh. No, I'm not, and that's kind of a little bit out of my area, but go ahead.
Is that a similar kind of story, Greg?
Well, it's outside of your professional area, but not necessarily interest. The Phillips Brothers Mill is the last commercial steam logging operation in the United States. And they, of course, were building boxes largely for the Central Valley vegetable fruit trade, but they're still in operation. And so you can actually see all those things that you're digging up, the mill, the log pond, the planing mill, the box factory, the machine shop that was necessary for maintaining all of the equipment.
And all that stuff is still active there, huh?
It's absolutely active. I've known them for four generations, and they're living there, making their living just as they have for generations. So it's easy to find them on the Internet, Phillips Brothers Mill. Mm-hmm. There are actually quite a number of sites that talk about it, and they would be more than happy to talk with an archaeologist. The Smithsonian was certainly interested in them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for that, Greg. I very much appreciate that. So, John, I mean, how often does archaeology get into a realm where you're going to see something that is similar to what you've been digging on, for example?
Well, not very often. This sounds like an opportunity for a nice field trip.
I was just about to say, yeah. Well, they give you a day off.
To Reading, maybe this summer, go down there and see what's going on. We do have, north of Klamath Falls, you've maybe heard of the Collier Logging Museum.
Yes, uh-huh.
And that there's an example of logging past that you can go watch. And I think in June they start up their steam mill there, and they have a little demonstration of some early logging practice, early mill practices. So there's an example of something that's you can go see what it was like, the Collier Museum. But this Reading Phillips Brothers, that sounds kind of interesting if it's the last steam-driven, you know, log mill, and they're actually making boxes. I'd like to go see that, Greg.
Right. Thanks for that, Greg. Appreciate that. So let's talk again about the Crooked Creek Mill Camp and what happened there, because it sounds like it was quite the thriving place and yet was gone in pretty short order. And given the time in history, can we assume the Depression had a lot to do with this?
Yes. Yes. Some industries were Depression-proof. Not that one. Yeah, there was a downward trend in the economy, and this the demand. Everything just kind of came to a stop. You know, there's people weren't making things, people weren't buying things, and so there was just too much lumber. We didn't need any more at the time, until after World War II, it just went crazy. You know, with building. The Depression. Yeah, the Depression probably had a big influence on the closure of this mill.
And was it what year was it closed? Do we know?
God, I just don't have that in front of me, but I think it was like 31, 32, somewhere in
right,
there.
Right. So certainly by the time the Depression was taking hold, it was pretty clear. Yeah, you know, as often happens, as we have found out many times in the timber industry in our part of the world, that when the economy slows down, one of the first things to stop is the construction of new housing, and therefore the demand for lumber plummets.
Yeah.
I've been through that.
It's a very boom-bust kind of industry.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the logging techniques used there. Was the clear cut the primary method of obtaining the logs off the land?
No, it's a pine species, and we don't normally clear cut pine. It's not like Doug fir. It doesn't come back like a weed so much as Doug fir does. But no, that they were just getting the best of the best, old growth at that time. And these are trees. And here, old growth is 400, 500, 600-year-old trees.
Right.
Yeah, the big ones, the big giants that were here, and that's what they were getting. And beautiful lumber, if you're into lumber, there was no knots in them, clear pine, which would bring a premium price today. But, yeah, so the forest, you know, they were doing good forestry. They were just taking the ripe trees and letting little ones continue to grow. So they were.
Is an area forested today then, John?
It is forested today, yes, again. Mm-hmm. And we are proposing another timber sale in the area coming up here in the next couple of years. So,
which will get you busy on checking out the cultural sites potentially again.
Yes, yes, we do that a lot. This area, we've looked at this area quite a bit, so we know a lot about it, where sites are and what needs to be protected. But even with knowing what we know, we always find something new. Seems like when we go out there, something has been exposed, or we learn about new kinds of sites, new kinds of archaeological features that we didn't know about 20 years ago. So we're looking for different things too.
Given the value of this land to industrial purposes, I mean, you know, flat or at least fairly level land alongside a creek, it sounds like it would have been a great place for native habitation too. And I imagine there had been some there at some time.
Yes, yes. Our area was not heavily used. It was used lightly over a long period of time because we have long winters here. The native people would have been out of here by now, December. They weren't going to stay here during the winter. They would have moved east. They would have moved south. They would have moved west to get away from our snow and cold and so we do have native sites in the area, not villages or anything like that, just small encampments where they were maybe hunting or harvesting root crops or, you know, vegetable kinds of crops and manufacturing their tools and modifying their tools. But, yeah, not heavily used by the native people. And it was forested, so... there's not a lot of food in these forests.
Ah, okay.
So not a lot of attraction there for native people. I mean, they didn't have wooden houses, so they had no need for wood.
Right. We have an email here from Mike in Medford. He says, "I've been very interested in finding Native American sites in Jackson County. Do you have any recommendations on the best way to pursue this? You know, should he contact a forest archaeologist? Is that a good place to start?"
He wants to go look at them.
Yeah, he says he wants to find them. Not quite sure why.
Yeah, we do have a problem with people finding sites and taking artifacts, and that's against the law on federal land. I mean, I can escort people and to look at stuff. I would never give out information to somebody, say, "Here's where all the sites are. Go look." You
know? Right. Okay. So best to contact a Forest Service archaeologist in their neck of the woods.
Yeah. That probably would be best. Just come to one of our offices and talk to people. And I mean, there are sites where you can go look. You know, you can't dig, but you can go look. And we do have some sites that have been interpreted with signing that people can go look at and learn and enjoy from that.
The Passport in Time program and the Crooked Creek Mill Camp exploration, was there just would they just do a thorough job cleaning the place out when they dismantled the mill, or had it been looted?
That's a good question, mm-hmm. Jeffrey. I my feeling is that they just didn't have very much to begin with. As far as material goods, you know, they just had what they had, just kind of the bare minimum. I mean, you go into anybody's home today, and we have a lot of stuff. But a lot of the stuff we have would not survive, you know, plastic or fiber material or paper or whatever. What survives is the metal and the glass and those kinds of things. And they just didn't have a lot. They just didn't have a lot of possessions. They just didn't have a lot of things, and they didn't have disposable containers. All their oil containers or fuel containers were made out of metal, and they were used and reused over and over again. There was not a throwaway economy
right.
at that time.
Did you find any evidence of the corduroy road with the logs?
There's a little bit of that left. But you know, a lot of people take advantage of that opportunity and make a lot of firewood out of that stuff. You know, it's already there. You just have to go cut it up, and so I'm sure it got consumed by the locals for firewood.
For next year's Passport in Time project on the Fremont-Wainema National Forest, do you have a couple of good candidates in mind already, or is this something that's kind of hard to come up with each year?
Interesting you asked that. I do have a project that I'm going to advertise in the spring. It's be working at the Bly Ranger Station compound in Bly, Oregon. It was CCC built, Sylvan Conservation Corps built in the late 1930s, early 1940s, by the CCC camp out of Medford, as a matter of fact. But there was a camp in Bly, and they built the Bly compound, the Forest Service compound. It has three residences, an office, a garage, a warehouse, and a gas house, all made out of stone. And over the years, we have tried to maintain this compound, but it needs a lot of work. And what we're going to do next year is we're going to do a lot of masonry work with the stones. So
people who are good with their hands and maybe a mason looking for something to do on a week off could
use for people if they're interested in that kind of activity. We're going to be doing a lot of regrouting and just cleaning the stone and just maintaining that. And that'll be in July also next year, and it'll be advertised on Oregon, Fremont-Wainema National Forest, Passport in Time.
Okay, the Passport in Time program is linked from our website at jeffexchange.org, the Bly Ranger Station compound next year. This year's project was the Crooked Creek Mill Camp. John, it's been great to talk to you. John Kaiser, archaeologist at the Fremont-Wainema National Forest. Take care.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
You bet. And that'll do it for today's exchange. Our program is produced by Charlotte Dern of JPR News. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time, and please have a great day.